welcome to a special episode of the Heavy Matters podcast with myself, Venny, him, Joey. Tonight we are joined by the vocalist of an album we recently covered, and the band is called They Fell From the Sky. The album's called Decade, and we're joined by the frontman vocalist, Colin Doran. Colin, thank you so much for joining us and taking out to speak to us.
It's a pleasure.
Before we go on, Venny, I'm just going to ask you a quick question. I just want to cast your mind back to when we were in uni and we were watching gigs and listening to albums, especially the one we covered when we spoke about They Fell From the Sky. Did you ever think we'd be sat here speaking to the lead singer of 100 Reasons?
I did not. It's a very, it's a sweet spot when that record came about in our lives. You know, we must be 16, 17, kind of, and it really typifies that era. So, yeah, no, not in my wildest dreams.
I know. Best I've been so so much looking forward to this interview all day.
Thank you.
So thanks for joining us. So, Decade has been out now for what a month? We been over a month, is it?
About a month. I think it was just beginning of October. About a month.
And how's it been for you since it's been released? Have you been getting lots of feedback?
Reviews for it have been really positive, which is great, because when you care about something, it's nice that other people seem to care about it too. So from that perspective, we've been sort of quite bowled over, I think. So the response has just been really positive from pretty much everyone, which is nice. There's kind of not really too much to say about that. You know, we've been sitting on it for quite a long time. I think even when it was finished, it had been finished like 2 years before it came out or something daft. And a lot of it was sort of thinking about what we sort of wanted to do, because, you know, none of us are getting any younger, are we? So it's not one of those things where you can just jump in a van and go and try and make something of it. But in the same respect, I think because of the heritage of some of the people in the band, that means that people sort of give it the time of day as well. So it doesn't necessarily sort of disappear in the ether, which sadly does happen to some, you know, amazing bands. They sort of never get discovered because they just never really had the chance. So in that respect, I'm definitely sort of feel quite fortunate. But we sat on it for a while because we had to figure out sort of what our intentions were more than anything.
And what do you mean by your intentions?
Well, whether you're going to sort of try and tour it. Yeah, well, you're going to, you know, whether you're going to sort of tour it and, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that, again, when you're sort of trying to get something off the ground, you've got the energy to be able to do that. Your commitments in life are less. But when you're older, as we all are, you try and do something new. You kind of just want to do it because you absolutely love it and you want it out there and you want people to hear it. Not because you're necessarily sort of trying to make a ton of money from it or anything, or think of it as a new career. I've seen people that are sort of in my age bracket and they kind of look at those kinds of things as like, oh, you know, I'm going to try and recapture my 20s. It's like, don't bother. So, you know, just do something cool and do something good. And we're going to do a show. And if we do another show, we'll do another show. But, you know, that's the only show we've got coming up so far, is the only show we're going to do so far. So, yeah.
And that show's on is it the 9th or 10th of December?
It's the 9th of December.
9th of December in London, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes. So, yeah, it's fairly easy information to come by. So, yeah, should be fun.
Okay. Benny's had to nip off. I think you hear a child crying. Like you alluded to a minute ago there, Colin, we're not getting any younger and life gets in the way.
Well, that's all right, you know, because, you know, life doesn't have to sort of, you know, people, you know, life changes all the time, but it doesn't have to sort of change in a negative way, you know.
Yeah. Oh, he's back. So coming back then to They Fell From the Sky, the band, mm-hmm. Obviously we know your background. Jason was in Bullet From Valentine, and you said you've been sat on this album for 2 years now, but my understanding this has been in the works for a lot longer than that. So how did this, I don't know if you call it a side project or this project, a band, how did it come about in the first instance?
I think it was just that Jason was writing some music. And we did the This Is Menace stuff together, and we did a few shows with This Is Menace. We did like a little sort of European tour. And, you know, you just get on with people, you know, and I think, you know, Jason's got this really good sort of musical work ethic where he's just all about just doing something cool rather than there sort of being anything else around it. So he started writing a few instrumentals and what have you, and then I would sort of listen to them, and then I'd come up with ideas. And that was sort of very embryonic. Like, I did listen to your podcast, by the way, and I did listen to your review of the record. So Birth of Stars was like the first track that we wrote. And it was probably re-recorded maybe two or three times, because as we were kind of sitting on things and sessions were sort of quite sporadic, so it wasn't like you're in the studio every week writing, because you're not. You're like, oh, I've got an idea. And that could have been 6 months since the last one. So, you know, because it's, you know, when you're not doing something full time and you're just chipping away at something because it's fun and it's nice to dive into and dive out of as well, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's, like I said, was re-recorded a couple of times, just because, you know, I think sometimes recordings can become dated. And I think when we were sort of doing that, we were kind of trying to find a sound that would hopefully not be datable as much, if that makes sense. So even things like that. And then Dave got on board, he's doing like production stuff and that kind of thing. And obviously Lee playing the bass. So it primarily became about, I think, Dave, Jason and myself kind of, I think, plays probably sort of the biggest role in sort of the writing of the songs. And then Dave sometimes just go, look, I've got this great idea. And I go, yeah, right, cool. Let's just jam it out and let's go to his place. He's got a great little studio up in Evesham. So he'd go there for the weekend and sing a few songs, you know, or he'd come down to mine. So it was just a very sort of easy thing to make. It just took a long time to do it.
Is the fact the album's called Decades that it took a decade to make? Is that
pretty much, yeah. That was kind of, yeah, pretty much.
The cryptic clue.
Yeah, and that was kind of the point about sort of 10 songs as well and things like that. It was all kind of the number 10 was sort of quite synonymous with the record.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier then that, you know, your intentions about the band and the record. What are your aspirations for They Fell From The Sky? Do you see this becoming your full-time...
No.
You know...
No. Like, I mean, I just... I love the record. I love the guys in the band. It's one of the... I'm very, very proud of what we've come up with. I really am. And I'm really happy with it. But in terms of sort of... Again, you know, we're not trying to start a new band. I mean, Jason's just kicked off with Bullet again, you know, I think on the front cover of Metal Hammer or something this month and stuff like that. So, you know, not an easy person to get in a room with these days at the moment at all. And that's just because he's busy and that's his commitment. I've got other things going on in my world as well. Dave's producing pretty much constantly. So to sort of try and make it into something, I think it would be a bit half-assed. For me, I'm just glad that people are getting to hear it. I mean, that's all you want, I think. If you've done something that you're quite proud of, you just want people to hear it. And as long as people are hearing it, that's me happy. And like I said, the feedback's been pretty good. So, yeah, I'm just not going to complain at that either. But I'm not going to sit there and think, oh, do you know what? Maybe we can, you know. It's like, no, just let it be what it is and enjoy it for what it is rather than try and make it into something that it might never be.
do you think age and being around the music scene for a while gives you that outlook on things? Maybe if you're a younger man, you'd be no, we have to be full-blooded and really commit to this, whereas now you're a bit more philosophical about things.
I think so, yeah. And even when we were sort of talking about it, like literally like 10 years ago, there were sort of thoughts about it trying to be something more than that, but just like logistics and commitments to be able to do that, you know, your life is just in a different place and you have different responsibilities, you know, like a mortgage or something like that, you know, and you can't go on tour for 3 weeks and come back to life and go, hey babe, I've just earned 50 quid, you know, it's not really, you know, that kind of thing, you know, when you're starting a new band, a brand new band, and there's nothing behind you, there's no name or anything like that, and you're trying to build something up, you kind of need to be, I feel you need to be younger, or you have to have little to no commitment in your life to be able to do that, because it's a very selfish thing. And there's nothing wrong with that, because people are usually quite selfish about their careers, no matter what route they go down when they're younger. You know, you want to be a doctor, you know, it takes time, it takes effort, you've got to go away and do that. But sort of when you're a little bit older, yeah, it's just not the same. And yeah, maybe I'm not necessarily sort of more philosophical. I think I'm just sort of more realistic about what things are. And I still like to make music. I still like to be creative and I get to do that. And that's kind of part of me as a human being, I feel. So if I'm not doing that, I'm not really being me. So I'm always doing something. And again, it's just what it ends up being rather than with any sort of specific let's take it to the top of the charts kind of crap, you know. It's just like I said already, it's just want people to hear it.
Great. And going on to the kind of the the members of the band, from an outsider looking in, you'd look at the lineup and say that the members come from very different worlds musically. I mean, it may not be that personally, but just from an outsider's perspective, how do you think everyone's different backgrounds contribute to the overall sound of the record?
I don't know if it's necessarily what I call like a background thing, because I think we just all enjoy music. I primarily like music that's actually like very heavy. I actually do like, you know, one of my favorite bands is like Meshuggah, and you know, so I'm definitely looking forward to the new record, which I think they're working on at the moment. And I don't necessarily listen to many bands that are in that realm, because Meshuggah just do it better than anybody else. So I don't necessarily feel the need. I don't go in for stuff like Periphery, because it's a little bit too, there's not really what I call great songs with Periphery, which sounds like pretty bad of me to say that maybe, but you know, they can obviously play.
Poor Venny.
They can play. There's no doubt about it. But
sleep tonight.
But you know, I love bands like, you know, like Wilhaven and Clutch and stuff like that. They're all sort of, you know, and I used to listen to like Sepultura, Arise and Slayer and, you know, all that stuff back in the day. So for me, it's not necessarily a background thing. I think it's just that the type of music that just comes out of us is what comes out of us. And then when you put that together, that's kind of what you get. rather than there being sort of a specific kind of angle. And, you know, you're not sitting there going, oh, I want to go out and write a really heavy record. But you do sit there and go, yeah, I want to do something that's kind of maybe a little bit heavier than what I'm normally doing. And that's nothing to do with a goal to make something heavier. That's just Jason's kind of influences. Normally he makes heavier music than generally what I do when I'm writing. So then I bring my ideas to the table in other ways. So yeah, it's not really sort of like a design, I think, based on the heritage of people in the band. I think it's just, this is what happens when we write together. That's the music that comes out. And the one thing I don't like to do, I don't like to filter. I think you just write music, and if you like it, then great. You know, don't try and be something other than what it is, I suppose. Not trying to please anybody, I suppose, is the easiest way to say that when you're sort of being creative. Just, you know, write, and that's what comes out. Well, that was...
It is interesting, though, when you're talking about Jason, who plays in Bullet for My Valentine, who are the heavier side of the genre. Yeah. And, like, the songs on A Decade, they're not as heavy in comparison to that. And it's quite an interesting juxtaposition that Jason, is it perhaps that he just has too much of that, you know, double bass, blast beats all the time, and he's looking for a bit something, a bit more of an outlet, if that makes sense?
I mean, potentially, but I'm also, you know, and I just mean this in a completely sort of factual way, I have no idea how the writing works in Bullet for My Valentine.
Yeah.
So it could be, I don't know whether he's, I would hope that he's allowed to be creative in that band, because he's incredibly creative as a human being. He's brilliant. But I think, again, it's just, I guess, you know, for me, when I come at things, I try to come at things with like more melody, I think, because at the end of the day, I can like heavy music, but I like big, big, epic pop choruses and things like that. And those are things that, you know, you combine that with heavy music and it can be amazing. You know, so for me, you know, it's, I don't know, I guess it's just, you know, how I like it. And I suppose the easiest way to say this is that whatever was done on the record was done consciously, but without any sort of agenda in mind. It's probably the easiest way to say it. And I don't think, you know, Jason sort of specifically wrote songs that were, you know, less heavy or something like that, or I committed ideas that were, you know, softer way. I think it's just that these are the songs that we're writing, and it's kind of as simple as that, you know. Yeah.
So did you, just coming back to the recording of the album now, so this is obviously, it's been a long, long process. You said you've re-recorded songs twice, three times. But how, like, in the first instance, did you all get in a room together, or was it predominantly Jason and yourself would sit together and send each other ideas back and forward via, well, 10 years ago, what was it? Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I remember going out to Brighton once, and we did this thing down at BIM, which is one of the music schools down in Brighton. Yeah. And Jason was doing like a drum thing and I was doing a vocal thing. And he had an idea and he sent it to me and I'd heard it. And then I had an idea and I just went into a room and sang it to him. And he was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And then we kind of went in and recorded it later on and things like that. I think the good thing about it sort of taking such a long time is because there's no pressure and there's no expectation. if you're not quite happy with something, you can go back and tweak it. And, you know, that happened on a few of the songs. You know, even like the line, the music on the chorus was completely different originally. It was only when Dave and I just got in a room and, you know, the chorus was delivered. And then he's like, oh, and then Dave goes back and he'll work out and change some of the music underneath. And then Jason will come in and play the drums. So he's played the drums on it and that kind of thing. So sometimes it's the other way around. You know, you're changing vocal melodies and just tweaking little things. And that's, I think, what I kind of quite liked about the process, because there's no pressure to do anything. You can kind of, I don't think anybody ever comes out of the studio 100% happy with a product. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think that's what makes it art, because you're capturing a moment. But when you're not trying to do something necessarily, you know, with it, you haven't got a label trying to get it out and get your, you know, get you under the cosh to get it sorted. You're like, okay, well, note's a little bit annoying, really, or maybe I'm just going to change that line. You go, Dave, you know, when I next come to the studio, and he's like, yeah. And you go, just thinking about this, and he goes, all right, you know. And it's nice. It's very casual.
Yeah, I think luxury is the exact word that I think a lot of bands these days don't have, because labels, like you said, are pushing them, you know, to get this record out, this record out. On the other hand, though, was that a bit of a hindrance as well, because you had all this time and were perhaps overthinking things? You know, you had this 10-year period, and
yeah, I mean, even there are even times when it wasn't even a band. You know, you get like 5 songs in, and you're just like, you know, and then sort of sometimes my motivation to do it, for whatever reason, wasn't there, and so I just wasn't feeling it. And I think that's where a little bit of the, you know, what are we going to do with it, kind of had to sort of come into it. Because we, you know, and I think it was Dave, you know, probably about a few years in, that sort of started to drive it a little bit more. And they'd be like, you know, come on, Colin. All right. And I'd be like, okay. And then Jason would come and do a bit, you know, that kind of thing. So even sort of during the writing period, there's kind of that whole sort of fragmented section where we were kind of, we did a few shows sort of a few years back, you know, a couple here and there. But then again, it was that whole kind of, I didn't want this to be like a brand new, I'm trying to be in a famous band kind of thing. And, you know, I think Jason's quite lucky, because he's been able to sort of make music his entire life, and, you know, has done very well out of that in terms of, you know, been able to make money out of music, whereas I haven't always been in that situation. So for me, some of my commitments were a little bit, well, again, if I'm spending a weekend up in Evesham and I'm doing this and doing that, it's time away from family. And family, to me, is the most important thing. It comes before everything else. So whenever you're going to do something, you've got to talk to them about it. And, you know, not to say that anybody's going to say no, but you're still, you know, like I said, it's a selfish thing, because it is. It's you going off and doing your own thing. And that's, you know, okay for people sometimes. But then sometimes I'm sitting there thinking, at the time, I was probably working really hard, trying to do stuff and that, and then you're like, okay, babe, I'm just gonna now go to Dave's for the weekend and record. And then you just start to feel like a bit of a knob, really. So that kind of put things on hold for a bit. And I think, you know, you kind of go back to the songs again, oh, actually, it's kind of really good, really, we probably should finish it. You know, we're all, you know, but you know what I mean, we can't sort of, I think everyone kind of tries to put, you know, these big sort of backstories on things sometimes, you know, and about how, you know, we did this and there was that. And it's like, well, we're all human beings, we all have our lives going on. And, you know, even my time in 100 Reasons was amazing. You know, I never sort of, what you might call, you never sort of get the chance to sort of necessarily sail off into the sunset. And you don't, not everybody gets to kind of have that, you know. And I'm not, you know, begrudging that in any shape or form, because I'm just not that type of a person, full stop. I don't get bitter about things. I just go, okay, well, that was really cool. I had a great time. All right, move on. And I think in some cases, like, you know, when we were sort of writing this, it was kind of like, well, that was cool for a bit, and then maybe no. And then Dave would just send me an idea and go, check out this idea, Colin, just check this out, you know. And you go, oh, it's pretty good, isn't it? All right. and then you sort of have to sort of, again, you sort of get into sort of your time management again. So it sort of, yeah, just ended up sort of actually happening. So yeah, it's just, yeah, it's an odd thing to discuss, I think. And I think I've really sort of shared too much about those kinds of sides of making a record over such a protracted period of time, given the circumstances that are sort of happening in your life around that time as well. So, yeah, you know, and I became a dad within that period of time as well. So, you know, good luck going to write a record. You know, you've got to be around. Yeah, lots of things like that.
Sorry,
you go ahead. But I was going to say, you are talking to two professionals,
both of who have got young families who do this gig on the side in our spare time.
Yeah.
Sorry, darling, I'm just going to go in the kitchen and record another episode of the podcast. Do you know, so you are speaking with by no means as committed as you, I'm sure, to the cause. But yeah, you're speaking our language when you're saying, do you know, there are very many competing priorities in life. And yeah, it's good to do what you love, but it always comes as a bit of a price, I'm sure.
Yeah, if you're not, you know, I like to be, if you're not making enough money from it to do it, then, you know, it can't be the number one priority in your life. It can't be, because it doesn't pay the bills. And hopefully, maybe in some cases, you know, the podcast takes off. My mate does the Interplanetary podcast, actually, and that does really well. And stuff like that, sort of, you know, podcasts take off, and then, you know, you could be in a different predicament in a year or two's time or something like that, you know. I kind of saw a thing the other day, actually. I watched not all of it, but there's like an iTunes interview with Zane Lowe and Metallica. Have you watched it yet?
No.
I'm about halfway through it, I think, and I'm kind of doing it in sections. But I always remember, I think, it's that Some Kind of Monster film, and Zane Lowe's in that, and there's the bit where they literally diss him. They're actually quite rude about him.
Really?
Well, they're just very sort of dismissive, very dismissive. You know, it's kind of like a who's that guy kind of thing. And then sort of Zane's kind of sitting down and interviewing, and Zane's probably seen the film, you know. But, you know, that's what people do. You know, you do different things in your life. And like, my son's playing Minecraft Dungeons right now, by the way, if you can hear any noise in the background. But yeah, family first. And I've definitely digressed and gone off on one.
I was just going to say, it's refreshing to have someone speak so honest that, you know, because like you said, Benny, it isn't as easy as just saying, oh, I'm nipping out to, or Colin, like you said, I'm just nipping out to do vocals for a weekend. Like, those days are gone. I'm sure in your younger days when you were doing it with 100 Reasons stuff, it's completely different kettle of fish.
Yeah,
but
yeah, absolutely it was, because that was the job, you know.
And yeah.
It obviously didn't feel like a job because it was a great time, but that's your job. That's what your bread and butter is.
Sorry, Ben, I'm going to jump in one question quickly before you fire away. Colin, I want to talk about your vocals on this album because, and I'll be brutally honest now, since 100 Reasons, I've not heard anything you've done up until this album. And shout out to Jay Perry, who is your PR, who sent this on. And
yeah, she's amazing.
It was straight on the top. It was Colin Doran, 100 Reasons, and Jason, etc. And I was like, right, let's have a play. And as soon as I pressed it and heard your vocals, it was such a nostalgic feeling. And I text Benny and said, Benny, we've got to do this. And you've obviously heard our review of the album.
Yeah.
Like we said, it was an album we didn't know we needed, but we absolutely loved it.
Thank you. Anyway,
my question is, your vocals, they don't seem to have changed. And this is not a negative point. Your vocals don't seem to have changed since the days and 100 Reasons to the new album Decade. Have you been looking after your vocals as such, or is this just a blessing that you...
Not really.
All right.
I mean, I don't smoke anymore. I used to smoke cigarettes actually when I was in 100 Reasons, and then I kind of gave up sort of fairly soon afterwards, funnily enough. But I don't smoke cigarettes at all or anything like that. I don't think I sort of go out my way to look after my voice. I think if I've got a session coming up, then, you know, I'll rest my voice a little bit, I'll warm up, stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, a couple of people have already said that, actually, and it's kind of just really flattering, I think. I don't know whether I necessarily feel it, because, you know, I'm older now. But, you know, that's for other people, I think, to decide. But I don't sort of go out of my way to look after my voice, but I don't necessarily really stop singing. And because I've been kind of head of education at a school where I do teaching, that's actually very good for keeping your vocals in check. Because, you know, you're doing a lecture for 2 hours. You know, there's an energy that comes with that and a certain amount of stamina. So maybe that's part of it. I don't know. I don't have like a secret recipe or anything, but I haven't been sort of like, you know, doing lip trills every morning or anything like that. That's for sure.
Very, very blessed then.
Lucky, yeah. I guess.
A quick question. Jason is credited with writing a lot of the songs. I'm sure there's plenty of examples out there, but as a drummer, is he kind of a multi-instrumentalist? And
oh, yeah,
does he write kind of music on the guitar or piano or whatnot. And then, so that's how he does
it. He's just amazing. He's just like, he's easily one of the most talented people I know. His penis is really small though. So that's the only thing I'd really say, but everything else, absolutely brilliant, amazing, great guy, you know, loads of fun to be around.
We know what the podcast is going to be titled.
You know what the
clickbait,
the headline clickbait. Imagine what Colin says about his bandmate.
It's kind of one of those joke things we used to have in the band, like in 100 Reasons and stuff, where you just meet these people who are just absolutely incredible, and you're just like, that's got to be what's wrong with them. That's got to be something. Like, do you know what I mean? There's got to be something. So that was just a joke saying,
The next question I had, I don't always like to ask an artist necessarily the meaning behind lyrics, but every time I hear this song, I always get this pang of curiosity of what it's about. The Joy of Hindsight on the album, I really can't put it all together. So I don't know if you mind sharing what that song's about, even if it's in the briefest sense.
It's about people standing by and doing nothing. But in some cases, that is actually sort of the right thing to do. Because if you're just not up to stepping into something that you're going to have no control of, you know, you can sort of end up worse. And I actually remember many, 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 many years ago, when I was out on like a Friday night, and, you know, some people were starting to get into a bit of a to-do. And it was just wasn't really a nice thing to see, I suppose, is the easiest way to say that. I always find that when human beings are violent towards other people and this kind of action in front of you, it's pretty sickening. And, you know, you can glamorize it as much as you like in films and everything else. And I watch, you know, John Wick and all that, and it's, you know, cool, because I'm very aware that it's not real. But when it's real and it's in front of you, it's horrible. And I think the thing for me is that, you know, when I see that kind of stuff, I'm not necessarily the type of person that I probably want to step in. But I think my own personality says that I don't think I'd feel like I was being stupid if I did. You know, which then kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a couple of layers to, I think, that the feelings behind that is the kind of wanting to help, but knowing that you can't. But then there's people around that are just not helping the situation at all, you know. And I think it was a little bit of a slight kind of comment on how the first thing people do really is kind of pull out their phones and start recording things rather than sort of necessarily being productive. I mean, even today, in the news, there's like a dying seal on a beach and families are going getting their photos taken with it and other people are throwing stones in it. And it's like, can you people just fuck off?
Yeah. You know? It's like that episode of Black Mirror where everyone's just like a zombie just filming stuff. It's exactly like that.
So it's a little bit of that in it and a little bit of sort of, you know, sort of seeing stuff, you know, you see it throughout life anyway. I don't know many people that sort of haven't witnessed stuff like that, but it's just, to me, it's just, I think it's appalling. There we go.
I just want to quickly, you've just made an interesting point about camera phones and stuff, and it leads me on to quite a good question. What's your thoughts on people filming live shows and having, I mean, taking photos, I suppose, is one thing, but what's your thoughts on having people just stood there with their phones filming stuff for you as a member of a band?
I mean, I've seen like Maynard James Keenan and stuff. And I've seen Adele and stuff like that as well. And I think that if you're in the pit, right, I mean, and you're at a Meshuggah concert, if you're in the pit, right, no one's going to be pulling their phone out anytime soon because it's getting broken, okay? But I think when you're looking at a certain type of audience, then they are maybe going to be more into the idea of pulling a phone out and doing a video. I mean, if I'm honest, right, I watch live clips on YouTube all the time. Right, I watch old like Mike Patton videos and stuff like that. I watch live videos of Clutch. I watch looking to see if Meshuggah will ever play Our Rage Won't Die live. But, you know, which I haven't seen on YouTube yet. But, you know, if you're not going to get to see them because you haven't seen them for ages or whatever, then to some people that's kind of the next best thing. And those are kind of arguably like the memories that you have. I'm not against it. And I think at an Adele concert, again, you know, people are, they're going to get out of their phones, they're going to film it. And I think that's okay. I mean, I used to buy bootlegs down at Camden Market, you know, you know, you see like the Machine Head of Brixton show that you were at, you know, and again, you know, someone's on a dodgy VHS and you go and buy it or whatever, and you've managed to get the mix from the sound desk or whatever, you know, and then you watch that. It's memorabilia. It's capturing memories. It's just a different thing. I think what a lot of these artists take issue is they feel that those people aren't in the moment with them. And I think that's the main thing where they sort of come in from. But I think even from sort of my perspective, I don't, you know, that's kind of the way it is now. It's just kind of how it is. And you'll always get your fans at the front that are just going to be lapping up and enjoying the show and having a great time. And, you know, I'm very rarely in the pit these days whenever I go to shows. You know, I'm at the back now, you know, with my beer.
Same as us.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of the ring doorbell. Don't know if it's going off though. It's just the motion at your door. Nothing. So, all right, let's just edit that out. but yeah, I do sort of feel that, you know, I think people just have to understand that the world has changed, and it's not for us to sit here in our 30s and 40s or whatever and moan about that. I think you kind of have to just embrace it. You know, somebody that's capturing that moment might post that out there, and that's going to increase your fan base and that's going to increase awareness. People like me that are sitting with a glass of wine or whatever, watching YouTube, you know, videos and stuff like that, you know, that's a pastime. So if people didn't do that, the content wouldn't be there. So I don't know. I'm not either for it, I don't think, and I'm not really against it either. I think it's a bit of a live and let live, and I don't feel, yeah, I don't really mind it, I guess.
I was just interested to hear your thoughts on it, because different people do have different opinions. So I can, you've made very valid points there. And then I suppose onto my penultimate question for this evening would be, again, we're talking about how old we are, you know, going from the days of us buying CDs and HMV and, you know, like you going on Camden Market. What's your thoughts on the likes of Spotify and the streaming services these days? Do you see it as a good marketing tool, or do you see it as a bit of a detrimental to the scene as well?
I don't mind Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal as a service in terms of what they provide, but I do hate them for the amount of money that they pay songwriters. I hate them for it. I absolutely detest them. And the fact that in the last week or two, they're now approaching, I think, the US Senate or whatever, because they revise their fees every 5 years or so. So Apple and Spotify are now trying to pay even less. In Tidal's defense, they kind of pay pretty much better than anyone else if you're on Tidal. But Spotify, you've got a multi-billionaire sitting in probably a very, very big house, making his money out of effectively, if I was to liken it to, I suppose the easiest way to look at this, and I say this to other people, so if it becomes a little bit sort of tropey, then just tell me shut up. But in this day and age, it's very, very difficult to live a, how can I say, a guilt-free life, all right? I'm sitting here right now talking to you on a MacBook or whatever, which is probably made by somebody that would potentially never be able to afford one. All right. Now, years ago, you know, you'd have people like Nike and stuff getting hauled over the coals for, you know, child labor and sweatshops, things like that. Okay. Now, obviously, the conditions are not as bad because we're talking about grown adults here. But I think in terms of the way that Spotify pay people, it's morally wrong to pay that rate. I think the labels have a lot to do with it as well, because they're the ones that have the content. They didn't start their own streaming service where they could pay people fairly. They got on board with someone else entirely because they couldn't be bothered to do it themselves. So I understand the platforms in terms of discoverability. I don't expect to make any money out of being on those platforms. But I think you can't sort of not be on them, because that's what people do. I have a subscription to Spotify. All right. Because even though I've still got my CD collection is in the loft, and I will still buy a few CDs here and there. But they go in the loft because I buy them because I want to support the artist. But that's the only sort of thing behind it, really. So yeah, I have to sort of separate the two rather than treat them as one thing. But Spotify as a company, I hate them with a passion. But in terms of if that's where your audience is, you've got to be where your audience is so that they can listen to your music, and then hopefully from that comes a ticket to a show or buying a bit of merch or something like that.
And that is the ultimate goal these days with bands in this in the metal genre especially,
yeah,
is the shows and the merch. So Venny and I have Spotify that we counts as well, but we don't hide from that. But we will always go to shows. We buy. I'm a vinyl collector. Merch or something. Well, that's how we support. And I think, sorry, just Spotify is that really good thing for discoverability, like you said, because back in the day when I bought I don't know if you've heard of the Australian band called The Berserker.
No.
Right. So I was, I don't know, 15, 16 years old, and the cover of this band was a erect phallus and a woman eating it, and I thought this is the coolest thing ever. And
it's very Cannibal Corpse, isn't it? It's very Cannibal Corpse.
It's yeah, it is.
It's sub Cannibal Corpse. It's
sub Cannibal Corpse. That was poor remember man's, the poor man's
and
it's a poor man's Progeria. Is that what it is?
Oh, it was. It was. But anyway, my point is, I spent 16 quid on this CD because it was obviously exported from out somewhere, and it was the biggest load of shite ever. Now, if I'd had Spotify back, if I'd had Spotify back in the day, I could have gone, oh, that looks interesting, put on one song and gone, oh, well, I'm not buying that. Do you know what I mean? So that's where...
Absolutely. But when you look at some, you know, I sort of talked a little bit about Clutch before. You can't buy Elephant Riders anymore. You know, it's not in circulation in a physical sense. So the only way you're going to do is get that on Spotify, Apple Music or something like that. You know, I've quite recently, I started sort of rediscovering the band Death, you know, Chuck Schuldiner and that, and listening to a few of those tracks and stuff like that, and again sort of getting hold of that is surprisingly difficult now, and then when you go on Spotify, like, oh, it was remastered in 2009, didn't know that, okay. You know, and you know, don't get me wrong, I don't listen to bands like that all the time, but I do like to listen to them because they're like stupidly technical. Well, they're Morbid Angel, their stuff's actually not, well, I don't know, doesn't seem to know what he's doing when they're playing on some of their older stuff. They needed Pro Tools. you know, but that's what's really good as well. And I think what's good about Spotify as a service is that, you know, the music's there and it's there, and you can go back 30 or 40 years and listen to something, and it's there, and that's great. But I think, yeah, I think from a business perspective and what they do and how much money they make off of the back of it, it's effectively, you know, it's not quite slave labor, but it's pretty close. And now they're trying to make it even lower. So, yeah. Although, admittedly, the UK is actually talking about scrapping the laws around it and having a bit of a reset, like a complete reset. Whether that will happen or not, I don't know. But it was something that was talked about a few weeks back. See what happens.
Yeah.
Probably nothing. It's a Conservative government, but we'll see.
It's interesting here. I mean, as a disclaimer, my main reason for supporting Spotify is that I hope the owner will buy up Arsenal Football Club and pump a load of money in there. But...
Fair enough. But you know, but that's who we are. You know, as a species, we're naturally contradictory, and that's what I mean about sort of saying it's very difficult to live a moral life, because even if you. You know, I'm not a vegan and I don't slate anybody for a lifestyle choice or anything if that's up to them. My whole thing is live and let live. But you're still going to pull out your mobile phone that was made in a sweatshop in China.
Yeah. You know? I mean, everyone is a hypocrite. What extent you are.
Exactly. And I think, you know, there's people that kind of, I think, need to sort of embrace that a little bit more. Because I think if you understand that about yourself a little bit more, then you can maybe give a little bit more to other people as well. You know, can let a few things go.
Absolutely. My last question for the evening, I'm really grateful for your time. We've talked a lot about how the music industry has changed in the kind of 20 years or longer that we've been around. How do you feel the music scene has changed in terms of not necessarily super heavy music, but alternative music and everything else that comes along with it?
I don't know if it's something I really sort of overly think about. I mean, if I hear a good band, I hear a good band and then I'll listen to it. I like to be, you know, people to sort of give me suggestions and things like that. I suppose I'm a little bit of a person that might sort of rely on things from a few years ago that, you know, your classics, that kind of thing. But I'm always out to kind of discover new music and always like to enjoy listening to sort of pretty much, I like a lot. I suppose the thing for me is whenever I listen to something, even if it wouldn't necessarily normally be to my taste, what I normally try to do is try and find something about it. And that could even be like, you know, I've got a secret love of Taylor Swift, right?
Because second exclusive of the interview.
You know, to be true. she's got some amazing songs. Like, some of the choruses and some of the songs, they're stupid good. And, you know, to just sit there and say, well, because I'm into this, I can't admit that, I think is it's a bit of a shame, really. I mean,
her last post-rock album was really good as well. I enjoyed that myself. So,
but she's got some great tunes. And so, you know, from my perspective, you know, I can't really sort of slate her. And I think, you know, it's just, and the thing is, when you listen to music like that, I think when you listen to other music, and if you make music, you should just listen to music, because I found, you know, if you sort of go back to sort of the nu metal days, it just, like with a lot of types of bands, the genre then sorts of just starts to kind of eat itself, because there's no creativity within it. And creativity normally comes from listening to other things and listening to other areas and sort of bringing that into your genre. I wouldn't say
Carnivorous Erection. I can recommend it heartily. Try and find the positive in that.
Yeah.
I guess the album cover is the main positive, but
yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a talking point. We're talking about now. It's not something that I necessarily sort of go out of my way to sort of dig into. But, you know, if I'm in the car and I've got a playlist on or something like that, I'll find something. You know, quite excited about the new Converge record. Heard the track, was it New Moon? I think it was the other day. And I was like, wow, something like that, New Moon or Blood Moon or something. I can't remember.
Blood Moon, yeah.
That was it, yeah. And I love Converge, and they're always doing something new, and they're always kind of pushing boundaries, I think, particularly sort of within the genre that they make. And, you know, easily my favorite record is obviously Jane Doe, because that was just the one, wasn't it? But to sort of see how they've changed and what they've done over the years. It's always exciting when they bring out new music. And have they always got it right? Probably not. But, you know, sometimes it goes a little bit too far, I think, for my opinion anyway. But it's always exciting when they've got something coming out. So those are the kind of things that I sort of keep an eye on as well. And obviously the new Meshuggah record and things like that. But as a sort of willfully sort of discovering new bands, unless I'm kind of literally someone goes, you've got to check this band out, I'm probably not really going to be digging too deep or anything like that.
So, final question then. As we are a alternative music podcast, what's been your greatest discovery recently then, outside of your Meshuggah, Converge, etc.? Putting you on the spot now. Come on. And you can't say they fell from the sky either.
No, I can't, can I?
No.
Shameless self-promotion.
Well, I try not to do that too much. I heard a track from a UK rapper called Central C the other day, and that really kind of blew my socks off, because I'm not really what you call a UK rap fan. I'm around it quite a lot. Just a new track from that. I can't remember what it's called. It's on a playlist, but it's making me want to listen to more Central C. It was really good. It was really quite poppy as well. Central C. It's a UK rap artist. Very good. But, you know, that's not me sort of trying to be cool or anything, because I'm definitely not. But when I look at that genre quite a lot, it doesn't really do a lot for me. But I just think sort of the pop sensibility around the track really kind of went, I'm going to dig a bit deep on this one.
It's always so great to discover new music, isn't it?
Well, I think so. And, yeah. You know, should be.
Oh, it's Central C-E-E,
yeah.
C-E-E.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I'll have a listen to that. Obsessed With You, I think, is that is number one. So we'll, I'll have a little play on that after. Benny, you can do a review for that maybe if you want.
Yeah, a bit out of my wheelhouse, but I'll give it a go.
Well, do you know what? If it floats your boat, you know. Or not.
That's it. Well, listen, Colin, it's been an absolute blast having you on the show. Like I said off air, it's been such a exciting build up to speak to you, and
you.
Like I still pinching myself, like 37 years old now, thinking, like, you know, I was at university when I was seeing 100 Reasons in like the university bar, and here we are today. But anyway, the new band is They Fell From The Sky. The album's Decade. It's out now. And you're playing a show on the 9th of December, is it?
We are indeed, yeah. That's
the 9th of December, Thursday, 9th of December. I'm going to try and get over for that.
But yeah, come down.
I'm then going out to Eindhoven on the Friday. So logistically, I'm going to try and make it. But anyway, that aside, please go down and support the bands. We've already spoke about Spotify for Discover and stuff. So go down, buy tickets, buy merch, CDs. Are there vinyl coming out with the album, Colin?
Yeah, we did a vinyl. So yeah.
Oh. I'll be getting that one after then. Venny, anything you want to say as we finish?
Thanks again for your time as a busy family man. It's kind of you to give up your evening, so thank you.
No, I appreciate your time as well. It's good to chat. So yeah, thanks a lot for having
Colin,
me. Really good
we'll
fun.
Hopefully see you on the road very soon. And once again, thank you for joining us and thanks for listening to the podcast. So we'll see you next time.
See you later.